We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate, and five-star app Meditation Studio. I'm your host, Patricia Karpis, along with my co-host, Ariel Garten, every other week-ish. We are hoping that your meditation practice is giving you what you need to stay more calm, grounded, and resilient wherever you are. And if you're new to meditation or you want to deepen your practice, now's a great time to check out the Muse headband at choosemuse.com. Muse tracks your brain, heart, breath, and body during meditation to give you real-time feedback. Try it to track your sleep as well. Now, on to Ariel.
Re-entry to life after COVID comes with a lot of excitement, but also some anxiety of its own, right? After more than a year living a very different life, what's it going to be like to go back to normal? Is there such a thing as normal? Some of us have discovered that as much as we hated being stuck home alone, oddly, the idea of going out to see people again may seem strange now. So how do we successfully put our toe back in and re-enter? And even if you cannot wait to see people again, how do we take what we learned from the pandemic and translate it into post-traumatic growth rather than post-traumatic stress? Our guest this week, Dr. Diana Hill, is here to thoughtfully guide us through these questions with practical methods and insightful notions to help us safely, successfully, and healthily re-enter post-COVID. Dr. Diana Hill is a clinical psychologist and expert in ACT, that's acceptance and commitment therapy. It's a cutting-edge, evidence-based form of psychotherapy that helps people develop psychological flexibility. Diana's new book, ACT Daily Journal, helps us as we rebuild and re-enter our lives. So I'm excited to hear all about how Diana is going to help us think about the right way to get back in and keep our minds and our hearts healthy while we do it. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
It is wonderful for you to be here with us. I'm really excited because you've come to talk about the hot topic on everybody's mind, which is how do we deal with re-entering the world after COVID?
Yeah, well, it's something that I think many people are thinking about right now, just as we went through a big transition of how are we going to enter the world of COVID? And now we're transitioning into what is it going to look like as we come out? And I think that this is a real opportunity for many of us. And sometimes the biggest challenges in our lives offer the biggest opportunity to make some changes, as well as reflect and think about our values and what matters most to us. And I think that when I'm thinking about reentry, I'm thinking about flexible reentry and values-based reentry. And I can talk a little bit about how ACT in particular may be helpful at this time.
Sure. You mentioned two words, flexible reentry and value-based reentry. What do you mean by them?
Flexibility is all about adaptation, and humans actually, and all species, adapt over time. But unfortunately, sometimes time moves really quickly and our adaptation doesn't follow that same speed. We can think about the environmental mismatch between our brains and our environment right now. We don't always adapt. But I think that when I think about adaptation, we can all reflect back on some pretty amazing things that we did as a species and collectively, and just the individuals listening to adapt to COVID. And there was definitely a learning curve, and it was hard and it was scary, and you were able to do it. So I think the first thing about adaptation is, getting unstuck from our rigid beliefs about ourselves, or maybe even our own thoughts that can get in the way and tell us that we can't do things, being able to create a little bit of space from those thoughts. And that is what is called cognitive diffusion. So cognitive diffusion is one of the six core processes in ACT, getting space from your thoughts, getting flexible in your behavior. And then the values component is about what is it that you really care about, what matters most to you. Maybe in this moment in time as we're transitioning out of COVID, you've gotten clearer about how you want to spend your time, and you've gotten clearer about what is important to you. And instead of just rushing through to get back in to life again, I think it would be important to move slowly through this transition, because times of transition are also times when not only can we make positive changes, but they can also be times when we can injure ourselves, right? So transitioning from one thing to another, doing it with intention, and also being flexible.
So I think we've all gone through the experience of being faced with what are our values. Either we lost things that were really valuable to us, financially, our job, our security, our ability to be close with people, or we got more in touch with things that were really valuable to us that we had become distanced to or not realized, like being close to our family or being able to prepare our own meals because we are no longer in the office, or being able to focus on fitness or sleep or me time or all of the things that not running around afforded us. So how do you propose that people take what they found valuable and bring it with them? What is an ideal mechanism for that transition? And also to be able to make space so that those valuable things continue to stay at the forefront.
Well, I love how you discuss values in terms of loss, because a lot of times we don't think about that, that actually the things that are most painful to us often point to what matters most to us. So the experience of discomfort and pain over this time has also revealed what's important. I mean, even just for me, seeing clients in my office and sharing a cup of tea and being able to hug my mom, these really simple things that seem so simple, but then when they're taken away, we realize how much they point to our values. So I think there's the first step in identifying how you want to move forward with this transition out of COVID is identifying for you what your values are. And sometimes when people come in to work with me in an ACT, we think about values as being domains, like I really value my health or I really value my family. But in ACT, the way that we describe values is that they're more like the verbs and the adverbs. They're how you are, the qualities of action that you bring into those domains. So if you really value your health, how do you want to be in that domain of your life? How do you want to act? What are the things that if I were watching you throughout your day that would really demonstrate this value, this caring around this domain? And for someone, it may be they value their health, and so that means that they're moving throughout the day more. And for someone else, it may be they're valuing your health, so they're going to the doctor and getting that mammogram or that checkup that maybe they haven't gotten over this period of time. Values, I think, are about qualities of action and slowing down to look at, okay, where am I out of alignment, or maybe where have I gotten more in alignment with how I want to be in the world. Now, the hard part is going to be continuing to do that, taking committed action. And committed action is pursuing your values even in the face of obstacles. So we could talk a little bit about some of the behavioral science as well as more of the contemplative approaches to committed action.
That sounds great. Before we go there, as you're talking, I'm sort of going through my own mind the things that were valuable during the pandemic. One thing I discovered was I don't necessarily value a lot of interaction with people I don't know. I thought I did, and if it happened again, I'd be delighted, but there's also a sense of relief to not have to do it. So that's gone away. I definitely really value hugging my mom because it's really painful that I can't do that. I didn't necessarily value working in the office because although at first when it was gone, it was quite painful, now I actually adapted very quickly. So although I guess I valued it, it was something that I've been able to replace or find the things that I needed from there in other ways. I definitely value time with my child because that enhanced and that has improved my life. And I'd be very sad if that amount of time has now decreased moving forward. So it's been interesting to see both through losses what I didn't really value and through losses the small things that I desperately valued and still feel attached. And then there's all the funny things like going to the dentist. We're still in lockdown here in Canada, in like absolute lockdown. And I got my notification from my dentist telling me that I had my dental appointment. And I said, I could choose to go now, but I don't actually value that. I'm going to choose to not go to the dentist after my 6 months. I'll wait another 5 months. I know I can brush my own teeth. It's fine. But after a certain period of time, there's going to be a sense of pressure of like, okay, now it's gotten too much. I don't care how locked down we are. I'm going to the dentist. So value also seems to be shifting. Things that you don't value when you have a little bit of it or when some need is fulfilled can very easily shift if something else moves, like time or your needs.
Absolutely. And there's this clarity around what matters there. When you have things taken away from you, you decide which things are the most important to me that I want to bring back first. We live in fire country here in Santa Barbara, and I've evacuated a few times in my life. And in this last evacuation, we had the kids each take a little box, and they could only put what, you know, those shoebox, whatever it is, your most special things in this shoebox. And we had our most special things in the back of our Subaru, and we drove off from our house. And I remember looking at the back of my car and just like everything that was important was in this car because it was my family and caring and taking care of this family. So in some ways, we've had our own stripping away during COVID of these things, that some things we realized, oh my gosh, I could do without having another baby shower or wedding. And man, just to have a cup of coffee with my friend without a face mask on and to hug her and smell her. So that's the real gift. I mean, I think there's some real gifts from this time, as much as there's been some real horrors from this time for all of us. But post-traumatic growth is really about being able to step out of trauma, collective trauma that we've been through. And I will say COVID has affected some people disproportionately more than others. And we're seeing that in the research. Absolutely. The BIPOC community, people that are essential workers, and actually surprisingly, Generation Z has been, of all the generations, the most impacted mental health-wise by COVID. And in the face of that, as we're moving out of this time, we can see that post-traumatic growth is the opportunity to reflect on meaning, to reflect on a sense of hope, and hope being defined by looking at the past and looking to the future, right? As well as a greater sense of interconnectedness and common humanity, because we've been through something collectively as humans here. This is a human disease that we've shared in some ways and across the globe. And I think that's where we can dig deeper and use some of what we've learned to maybe make positive changes, not only within ourselves, but also within the world and the communities that we live in.
If you wanted to offer a methodology for people to really take advantage of the post-traumatic growth that might be there, what would it be?
I think it would be a few things. I mean, I think that one is reflection. Absolutely. Being able to take time to sit down, even as you were describing, Ariel, these almost like two column list. What did I learn from COVID about what matters to me? And what did I learn from COVID that doesn't really matter to me? Just sit down and make a big line down the page and do some free writing on that, because that will help you clarify some decisions you make in the future. I think another thing that can be very helpful with post-traumatic growth is finding common humanity as well as a sense of interconnectedness. And there's many avenues to finding that. One is, I even think, through our meditation practices. There's a meditation that I've been doing recently that I learned from Aneta Knop, who is a meditation. She practiced some Tibetan practices where she just has you look at your thumbs, and you can just put your thumbs in front of you. And when you look down at your two thumbs together, put them side by side, you can notice that your attention is narrowed. You're focusing on the I, the me that's in front of me. And that tends to happen when we feel threat, when we're in our drive system. We have more of an egocentric perspective. Even when we're just looking at things close up, it activates parts of our brain that are more egocentric as compared to allocentric. But then what you can do is you can imagine that you're slowly spreading those two thumbs to the side. One goes to the right and one goes to the left. And there's a moment where your mind wants to choose one, right? Like, where am I? But you can just let that go and keep your focus gently forward while your thumbs spread to the wide, expanding your perspective to the periphery and to the 360 and to the whole room around you and the whole world around you, and letting your palms drop. and keeping that expansive awareness. So when we are in more of an expansive state like that, we can feel more interconnected. We can drop the me and that narrowed focus and feel more part of, which is what actually a huge swath of our brain is designed to do as well, not only detect threat, but also find community and feel like we belong.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful practice. You mentioned threat and fear, and really, so many of us have gone through extraordinary amounts of fear over the last year. There are those that really have gone through very, very deep loss, have themselves been sick or had somebody pass away. And then there's most of the rest of the world that have been in actual fear, that have spent a year with their nervous systems heightened and jacked, looking for the thing that is going to get them invisibly at the grocery store when they leave the house. I really believe that this has laid a very deep seed inside of us that will, for some people, manifest as post-traumatic stress. Do you have any recommendations for people to start to soften or untie or soothe that nervous system that has been overjacked in order to transition to a position of growth from that potential deep post-traumatic stress?
There's somatic practices, and then there's also behavioral and relational practices. So first, we need our nervous system to know that we are safe. And we've been getting a lot of cues that tell us that we aren't safe. Here I am in the US, and just going to the grocery store, not only was it fear of getting COVID, but it was fear of the other person. Are you on the same side that I'm on during the election? And just the complete fear of feeling like our own community is against us, or whichever side you were on. So our nervous system, you're right, has been in a state of chronic stress, and our brains aren't designed to be in threat long term. They're designed to be threatened short term, deal with the threat, and then come back to safety. We have pretty much 3 systems loosely of the brain, and this is Paul Gilbert's work, where we have the threat system, which helps us get to safety. We have the drive system, which helps us seek out resources. And then we have this contentment, soothing, safe system. And that system is all about nurturing our young, feeling safe within our communities, and being able to be in more of a collaborative as opposed to competitive relationship with each other. So in soothing the nervous system, the very first thing that when we're really dysregulated, that I recommend is just getting present, 2 feet on the floor, and actually using our breath. So the breath is a powerful tool that can tell us, by slowing our breath down to 5 counts in and 5 counts out, that I'm safe right now. So we inhale with a slow breath, even with our eyes open in our day, communicating with another person, and we exhale with a slow breath, even with our eyes open in our day. Tuning into your threat, your drive, your soothing system throughout your day, checking in and doing some simple practices like that. So that's the first thing. And then I think the second part is going back to meaning and purpose and values, that there's great benefit in the narrative that we create. And humans are storytellers, and sometimes storytelling can really be a problem for us, like when we're caught in a negative self-story or a judgmental self-story, but also telling the story of what has happened and telling the story of what we've learned and telling the story of how we want to grow from this can be really helpful, whether that's storytelling just verbally with another person or through writing. Expressive writing is one of the most useful tools that we can use when we're going through a traumatic experience. And then finally, I would say you're not alone. Recognizing that we're not alone in this is incredibly helpful, and that humans do really well when we feel safe and connected to other humans. So whether it's one person, if you feel like, oh, I just need one person or one pet, it could be not even another animal, it isn't another mammal, another pet, that can also help us with feeling safer in the world as it is right here in the present moment.
And soothing touch can be so powerful to activate the vagus nerve and to calm you down. So that's why being with a pet, being with a person who's in your house, when we can finally hug and touch, which is coming soon, making sure that we get those deep feelings of safety from being held in somebody's arms. And if you don't have arms, a weighted blanket, as silly as it may seem, even the weight of a blanket can confirm to your nervous system that actually we're safe, we're here, everything's okay.
Mm-hmm. One hand on your cheek, or imagining someone placing their hand on your cheek. What's interesting about imagery is that we can actually use imagery to soothe our nervous system as well. So we can imagine a compassionate person with us, with their arm around us or their hand on their cheek or the hand on our heart, even if we feel alone. And we can conjure up those feelings that we would feel just through imagery alone, just like we can use imagery by looking at our phone to activate our nervous system to go into a threat place as well. So yes, soothing touch is powerful. One hand on your belly, one hand on your heart, taking a slow, long breath.
Yeah, the hand on the heart is beautiful because you're also activating the vagus nerve right there by gentle pressure right on your chest.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I did throughout the pandemic was actually visualized myself being safe. I actually spent a lot of time lying there, just understanding deeply that I was safe, profusing my body with sensations of safety. I had this visual that I called safety sauce, and I would just imagine it sort of like poured on me. And as I did, it would just give me the sensation of safety. My greatest safe space in my imagination is under my blanket. I'd imagine just being under that blanket and that sensation of safety that comes from it, and then take that feeling and pull it throughout my body. And I was actually very conscious to note that my nervous system was really ramped. Yes, for good reason, because there was a potential threat outside. But while I was inside, there was actually no good reason for me to feel threatened, because actually it was completely safe. I'd washed my hands and everything's fine. So I spent a lot of time really just managing my nervous system. And so practices like meditation, like soothing touch, like spending time breathing deeply, breathing into your belly, activating your vagus nerve, all of these are key indicators to our system to let us know that actually everything now is safe. It is okay, even if it doesn't feel like it. We're allowed to transition into this place out of extreme, long-term, chronic sensations of stress or fear.
And I would add to that that it's both finding safeness, and I would say there's a difference between safety and safeness. Seeking safety is the person on their porch with their guns. I'm going to make myself safe no matter what. Whereas feeling safeness is the person on the porch with their dog or their cat or their friend. So when we cultivate safeness in some of those practices that you're describing, it also allows us to move out into the world to pursue our values, even in the face of obstacles. So one of the things that is interesting about psychology is that sometimes trying to control your anxiety or to control your distress or make it go away can lead to more of it. And there's something called the paradoxical effect of thought suppression or emotion suppression in anxiety. And I think it's important that when we're doing these soothing practices, we don't get attached to the outcome, that this is going to, I'm going to make sure that this works. Because much like sleep, the more that you try and fall asleep, the less likely it's going to happen. It's almost letting go of the outcome while also engaging in the practice. And I think that's where acceptance comes in. And that's one of the six core processes of psychological flexibility in ACT, that acceptance is moving towards with curiosity and openness, and that we can move towards our fears about moving out into the world. Just like we had fears about the world shutting down, now we have fears about, I hear all the time, like, what is it going to be like that first time I go back to work and I see people? I'm embarrassed, or I feel shame, or a lot of people are worried that their weight has changed or their appearance has changed, or they feel like they didn't do enough during this year. That's another thing that I hear a lot of. I didn't do enough. So-and-so did all of this and I have nothing to show, except for that you survived a pandemic, which is pretty impressive. But we get caught up in these fears and these thoughts about ourselves. And sometimes those are pretty loud and they're not going to go away by the time that it's time for you to go. So what we can do is make enough space for them. Here they are. These are the thoughts that show up. Have enough space there, like a bigger space, without getting caught up in them, so that you can continue to pursue what matters to you with a compassionate stance of this is hard, and it's hard for many.
So you make an incredibly good point, which is most of what happens to us in this world, we cannot change. And when we try to force an outcome, that outcome generally doesn't arrive. And the lack of that outcome only makes us more frustrated. And one of the big tricks that we learn, one of the big insights that one gets from meditation practice is the value of acceptance, that what we cannot change, we also have to accept. These feelings are here. These emotions are here. I can shift myself from one place to the other, but I can also accept if that is not happening for me in this moment and hold open the possibility for a future that may be the same or may be different. And you started to really hint at the tenets of ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy. I think now would be a great time for you to describe a little bit about what it is and why it can be so valuable.
Sure. Well, ACT is a modern approach to therapy, and it has both behavioral components from the behavioral science that researchers have learned about humans over many, many years, in combination with acceptance-based approaches. And what's interesting about ACT is that even though it's therapy, it's less about getting rid of symptoms or about diagnoses and more about flourishing and what does it take for humans to flourish. And there's really six core processes that together form psychological flexibility. And you can think about these six processes like sides of a box, that they all work together to encapsulate what ultimately leads to people having a full and rich life. Psychological flexibility is your ability to adapt and change, your ability to open up, accept, and allow, your ability to stay true to your values, even in the face of all the difficult stuff and challenges that shows up in life. So I can go through some of the core processes or the six core processes of ACT, but the research coming out on psychological flexibility during COVID is stunning in that researchers were tracking how psychologically flexible folks were, how much they were using these six core processes during COVID. And what they found that is that psychological flexibility was associated with lower depression, anxiety, insomnia, reduced suicide rates. It mitigates the impact of social isolation. It's helpful with family stress and discord. So if you're a more psychologically flexible parent, you had less spillover effects of COVID and stress onto your kids, and your kids ended up having better mental health outcomes. And so given that, we know that being able to adapt to change is something that is key. And I would add that being able to adapt to change and stay true to what matters to you is what we need most right now as well, as we're transitioning into just what is the next step for us.
So, hello, listeners. This is Michael from the Psychologists of the Clock podcast. If you like what you hear on Untangle, let me extend a friendly invitation to check out our show as well. We are four experts in psychology that bring you cutting-edge and science-based ideas to help you flourish in your relationships, work, and health. You can find Psychologists of the Clock wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and you can visit our website at offtheclockpsych.com.
How would one get more psychological flexibility? Can you describe it a little bit, and perhaps we can individually reflect on if we showed these qualities of psychological flexibility through the pandemic, and perhaps if we didn't, could you guide us through some ways in which we can increase our psychological flexibility to make the next steps go more effectively?
The first one I think probably listeners would relate to is being present, and much of our meditation practices are about helping us build that skill and that muscle of bringing ourselves back to the present. And in ACT, being present is really being present in your life, eyes open as it is, and being present where it matters most. So can you pause and get present in your body, get present with your kid, get present with your partner, get present with yourself, even when life around you feels really scary, or even when your thoughts are really loud? So that's the first psychological process. How present were you? How present are you in your life right now, in your body? And the second has to do
with perspective taking. So we did a little mini perspective taking exercise where I had your thumbs in front of you and you expanded to the side. But in ACT, perspective taking is about being able to contact a more transcendent version of you. You can imagine all your difficult thoughts and feelings are like up at the front of your heart, being able to step to the back of your heart where you have a view on them. And perspective taking is also about being able to take the perspective of others, being able to get behind the eyes of another and see what it's like to be them, that there's context that influences them, as opposed to getting just stuck in your one self story or worldview. So how well did you do at perspective taking? And we know that we're caught in self stories when we're caught in things like I am, I never, I can't, I always, you are, you never, you can't, you always. When we can get a little bit more flexible with our self stories, that can be incredibly helpful with adaptation to change. Another core process, those are both acceptance-based processes. Another core process has to do with our thoughts. And I alluded to that earlier with cognitive diffusion. And if you take your hand and you hold it up to your face, like really close to your face, and you imagine that your thoughts are on your hand, you'll notice that it's really hard to see your hand. And it's also really just hard to see what's in front of you because it's all fuzzy and blocking your view.
Yep. Trying it now. I can confirm that.
Yeah. And sometimes our thoughts can feel like that. Like we can be so caught in our head. I don't know if that happened for you at all, Ariel. You got caught in your head during COVID with thoughts sometimes. But the practice of cognitive diffusion is just slowly moving your hand away so that you could look at your hand and you could look at the room around you and really being able to have a little bit of space between you and your thoughts. And notice I didn't cut off your hand. I didn't write an alternative thought on your hand, like a positive thought. I just got some space from it. So when there's a little bit of space from our thoughts and we start to see thoughts as thoughts, not as us, then we have a little bit more wiggle room in our lives. Those are three acceptance components to ACT. And then there's some change-based ones, which maybe a little bit are more about things like taking committed action, as I mentioned earlier. So using some of the behavioral science of how do we reinforce behavior change. And when we engage in small little steps, like small tiny changes, they're more likely to stick than big leaps. And when we reinforce them with our values, they're more likely to be intrinsically rewarding so we can draw upon that when we are in times when other reinforces aren't available. So when you can't get a good girl or a good grade or get money for something, your values are always there. So they can be helpful with that process of taking committed action, which links to the process of values. And values are really about what we discussed before. Were you able to stay true and understand what matters to you during this time? So the last one is acceptance. And as we talked about before, I kind of like, and I saw that you interviewed Jed Brewer, and I also interviewed him for our podcast. And I love how he uses curiosity as another term, because I think sometimes acceptance, we don't approve of something. And so therefore we think we can't accept it. But actually, acceptance is not about approving or liking or wanting, but it's about allowing. And here in the US, we just had a massive amount of really great positive change that happened in terms of people got really clear on their values around the environment or their values around social justice and got really active in their lives to take action. And some of that had to do with waking up and acceptance of what is happening that's not okay. So it's not that you approved of it, but rather you opened up to the pain of it that motivated you to take action. So sometimes with acceptance, that can be really, really helpful, is to loosen our grip a little bit, to be able to allow what is so then we can take action in our lives.
Yeah, often we're in a situation where we resist the things that we don't like or aren't working for us, and that keeps us in tense relationship to it. And like Carl Jung said, what we resist persists. And the pandemic is one fantastic example of that. Those that could not accept what was going on and felt like they needed to resist it. Oh no, you know, this can't be happening. This is awful. This is terrible. I don't want my life to change. When you were unable to accept, you resisted a thing and only made it worse for yourself. And through that sense of resistance, created a whole lot of psychological tension trying to resist something that you actually could not change. So the idea of acceptance can become incredibly liberating when paradoxically we accept things that we think are unacceptable.
Absolutely. And There's a term in ACT called experiential avoidance. And Debbie Sorensen, who's my co-author, and I added to the term and call it the experiential avoidance roundabout. So if you've ever seen that movie of Chevy Chase and European Vacation, where he gets stuck in a roundabout in Europe and he can't get off and he is so scared to exit. And finally, he ends up just exhausted going around and around and around this thing, right? That we can get caught in our own roundabouts of avoidance when we're not practicing acceptance. And experiential avoidance is obvious things like we feel stress or we feel sadness or we feel longing. And so therefore we use our addictions like overeating or substances. Those are ways in which we experientially avoid what's happening under our skin. But it can also be more subtle. So we may experientially avoid by bracing our bodies, like clenching our teeth. There was actually an increase in teeth clenching and dental. You haven't gone to the dentist, but some people really should because they've ground their teeth. Or we hold our breath, or we see these back pain and neck pain from tensing so much by trying not to feel. And sometimes that's, we need to do that to protect ourselves from trauma. But when it becomes chronic, it's unhelpful to our bodies. But we also experientially avoid through things like overthinking and problem solving, or we experientially avoid through rushing through, or for some of us, we go into drive and we do a lot, we strive. So I saw in my practice during COVID, some people that experience the pain and the discomfort by opting out, shutting down, going back, hiding out, going under the covers, not making any kind of contact with anybody and going deeper into the depression. But I also saw the opposite of some people went into a lot of busy working a lot, striving, perfectionism. Those are all different signs of also experiential avoidance. And acceptance is dropping the rope with all of that. Sitting in the present moment, being here with what is in your body, the difficult sensations, and maybe even wrapping some arms of compassion, of open heart for yourself and for others. And that can really help get us out of those roundabouts of avoidance.
Yeah, we avoid because we are afraid of whatever's on the other side, yet we only make it worse for ourselves through the avoidance and the barriers and the resistance that built up through it. And if we would only open the door to the thing, to the emotion, to the experience, and step onto the other side, we discover it's really not that bad.
Yeah, you mentioned during COVID you had your go-tos, and I'm looking at my bookshelf of my go-tos, which were books like Comfortable with Uncertainty and Welcoming the Unwelcome. And one of my favorites is John O'Donohue's To Bless the Space Between Us, that it's this combination of both opening our hearts and ourselves up to not avoiding, but to being present with what is, but also bringing in a compassionate mind to what is. And I kind of think about a kindergartner on their first day of school. And many of us will probably feel like kindergartners on our first day of school and these different experiences of moving out into the world again. And what is it that allows the kindergartner to go explore? The kindergartner needs to feel safe. They need to feel like they have an attuned parent that's going to be there with them, take care of them, that's present. And then they also need to have something that's interesting. If you go into a kindergarten classroom and it's all boring old desks, they're not going to want to go either. So when we think about for ourselves, as we're moving out into the world, we need to both feel safe in ourselves and how we are attuned parents to ourselves. How can we be that loving, kind, encouraging, warm parent that's like, this is hard, this is scary, this is new, but then also remind them and remind ourselves really that there's things that you want out here. There's things to grow and explore and learn about the world. And it takes going out into it to be able to do that. But you get to do it at your own pace, and I'll be here. So I think that that's really ultimately my hope for folks, is that they can develop that compassionate voice, but also encouraging one to remind us all that we can pursue what we care about, even when it's hard.
This is so beautiful and so valuable. I've had so many conversations lately with people who are like, okay, I'm going to go out and see people, but I kind of don't want to. The introvert in me has really been satisfied by the fact that I can stay home, and maybe I just want to do that. And I mean, frankly, I'm an extrovert, and I even am feeling the same way. I'm feeling this hesitancy to just go out and be my free me. So this idea of ourselves compassionately seeing ourselves like the little kindergartner, where when you stand up as the parent, you can see that going to kindergarten is going to be great for your kid. He's going to meet people. It's going to be great. They'll learn stuff. They'll grow. They'll flourish. They'll play in the sandbox and make things. But to also recognize that it's normal to have that sense of hesitancy or uncertainty, to be able to give ourselves the compassionate support that our parent would be giving us on the first day of school, and the gentle encouragement that there are wonderful, valuable things out there that we will enjoy when, at our own speed, we open the door and re-enter and slowly discover them.
Yeah, we don't need to push ourselves out there. And then we also do need to encourage ourselves to pursue. And when it's a heart pursuit, when it's like, ooh, there's something interesting, there's a relationship out there, or there's a job that I'm interested in, or there's just being able to be out in the world again because I really value whatever, whether it's engaging in the movies or in gardening or whatever you care about. So it's going to be scary for all of us in a little bit in different ways, just like the first day of school was scary. And I think that's part of the perspective taking, is that remembering that you've done a lot of hard, scary things in your life. And each one has made you more flexible and better able to navigate the world. So when we zoom out, if we imagine we're like on a timeline of our life and we're sitting at an X on that timeline and it travels all the way back in time to before we were born, to our ancestors, because we carry the epigenetics of the trauma of our ancestors. So we don't actually begin at our beginning. And then it moves all the way forward into the future to the unknown. Here you are in the present moment. But you carry with you this history. You've grown and you've learned and you've adapted and you've matured and you've gained wisdom over time. And you get to have that right now and you get to use it. And those are your superpowers, really. No, they're not like you have to push yourself out and do impossible things, but they're more about finding the strength and resilience within each and every one of us.
That's amazing. This is so helpful and so valuable. I'm sure many people hearing this will resonate with it deeply and have the words rolling around in their head about being their own parent, being their own confidant and comforter and encourager, and being allowed to do things at their own pace. So thank you very, very much for sharing your wisdom. I also know you have a book coming out that will actually help people with these skills and to build the skills of ACT, the ACT Daily Journal, which breaks down acceptance and commitment therapy into an 8-week program to help us rebuild and re-enter our lives. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It's 8 weeks and we begin with preparing the ground, like the nutrient-rich soil, which we all need, with self-compassion, self-care, and intentional use of time. And we go through each of the 6 core processes that I mentioned, giving personal narratives about how we use these processes in our lives. So I'm a mom, I'm a yogi, I'm a daughter, I'm a friend, how I use these principles in my own life, but also what we've learned from hundreds of interviews with experts in the field of psychology and our own experience over 15 years of being clinical psychologists, my co-author Debbie and I. And we break it down to the teaching you how to use these practices on a daily basis. So each day has a little journal prompt, it has a description of the process, as well as an exercise to try on in that day. And what we know from learning any skill is that it's really repeated practice that helps us encode the skill, and really repeated practice in the real world that helps us encode the skill into our being. So that's how the book is broken down. And I feel really good about it. I feel like it's an interesting time to be writing a book about psychological flexibility at a time when I think it's really the tool that we need most. And I hope it's helpful to people.
Thank you so much. If people want to learn more about the book, can you let them know where to go to find it?
Sure. They can go to my website, which is drdianahill.com/book. And I offer a lot of stuff there as well on the website, blogs and ideas around this concept of ACT. And then I also teach a lot online. I have a lot of events and free offerings there, as well as teaching on Instagram. I just joined recently and now I'm doing a lot of teaching there. It's a way to be able to offer little snippets of ideas of how to use ACT that you can apply, and hopefully is a safe place to go in the social media world that you'll get good messaging.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and practical methodologies for us to increase our flexibility, our acceptance, and be able to safely reenter the world with post-traumatic growth at our heels.
Thank you. It's an honor and delight to spend this time with you.
So much likewise. That was Dr. Diana Hill. Her book, The ACT Daily Journal, can be found on her website, drdianahill.com. We also have links in the show notes to her book and blog. ACT is a fantastic methodology to really help you gain acceptance and shift what's going on in your life. I highly recommend using an ACT workbook like the ACT Daily Journal. Also, if you're looking for tools for mindfulness and meditation, Muse is a fantastic resource to help you meditate. It gives you real-time feedback on your brain during meditation, so it helps solve that problem of, am I doing it right? So you actually know when you're in focused attention in your meditation state and when your mind is wandering, and you become cued to bring your attention back to your breath. Muse has been used in over 200 published studies. It's on the Mars NASA simulator. Mayo Clinic uses it with breast cancer patients and has a wonderful study on it. It's used by thousands of clinicians and also by quite a number of meditation teachers who themselves learn to meditate using Muse. I highly recommend you check out choosemuse.com, choosemuse.com, to find out the brain sensing headband that helps you meditate and to learn more about what it is. We also have tools to help you sleep as well. If you're curious, you can use the discount code MUSESTRESSLESS at the checkout. That was yet another wonderful Untangle, and we look forward to seeing you back here next week. Much love.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top-quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.